just for today. We did the readings at the beginning of the event, and we're going to go ahead and bring our speaker up right now. Our next speaker is Victoria N.
Thank you for inviting me up here to speak. The other speakers today were incredible, so you have got the Holy Ghost bear with me because I'm a little bit nervous with public speaking. So I started using when I was a teenager, and I'm going to tell a little bit of my story, and I'm going to tell you guys how my spiritual growth and my willingness to grow spiritually did save my life during different points in my recovery. So anyway, I started using when I was a teenager, just like I assume most other teenagers. It seemed normal to me anyway. The first time that I tried my drug of choice, I didn't love it because I couldn't remember anything that happened that night. And that didn't seem like so much fun, but my parents were going through a particularly nasty divorce, and I was the emotional support for my mother. That resulted in me kind of going through a pretty bad depression and having some panic attacks, and that's kind of when they started. So the next time I tried my drug of choice, it was like the answer I've been looking for my whole life. I finally found something that made everything seem like it was going to be okay, and that worked for me for a little while, for a long while. During my active addiction, I was married twice. I got married when I was 22 years old to a man that I thought was going to be the love of my life. And he was in the military. We went through two deployments together, and ultimately we could not figure out how to connect again. He was going through some stuff, and the further I got into my addiction, I was a pretty toxic person myself. So it ended badly. We had a daughter together, and we could not stop fighting. So we split up, and I was pretty devastated. So when I met the man who would become my second husband, looking for some kind of love, somebody to love me and take care of me, and he said he wanted to get married, and I jumped on it. And I would say the night after we got married is when the abuse started. So what he liked to do is get drunk every night and tell me what a piece of shit I was. And the thing is, I've done a bunch of stuff in my active addiction that wasn't in line with my values. I hurt a bunch of people, and I cheated. I cheated on both of my husbands, and I, in that marriage, sought validation and comfort through online apps like Tinder. And I'm not proud of that. So when he would tell me every night that I was a piece of shit, nobody would ever love me. My parents liked him better than me. And, that if I ever left him, that he would take my children from me, and he would make sure that that happened, and that he could do it. I believed him, and I thought I deserved it. After the birth of my second daughter, I hadn't slept. Anybody who has a baby knows that you don't really sleep. But between no sleeping, postpartum depression, and having a man who would tell me I was a piece of shit every night, I really started spiraling. And I was already an addict, but man, my using got really out of control. I couldn't drive a car without hitting something. I hit the Starbucks sign. I hit other parked cars, and I pretended that I didn't. Right? I hit a lot of mailboxes. I had one person follow me and was like, "You hit my side view mirror." I was like, "That wasn't me." He said, "I followed you." I was like, "There's nothing wrong with it. You're fine." I tried giving fake numbers, right? And I guess one of the times I tried to do it, the guy called me right then and there, so I guess he'd gotten a fake number before. I was busted. But finally, I ended up totaling my car with my 2-month-old daughter in the back seat. I just dropped the other kids off at school, and I picked up, my next prescription, and I was on my way home to go use that prescription, and totaled my car, and we went to the hospital, and I was so proud, right, because my dad asked, "Are you high right now?" I said, "No, I haven't even used today yet." looking back, like, that's not, you know, something. I was so proud of myself. But I was clearly becoming a danger to my children. I was doing things that were putting their lives in danger, and my parents were worried. And they told me, we're gonna take your kids from you because we're worried that you're gonna hurt them, not intentionally. But next time I drive, next time I get in the car, we didn't know what was gonna happen. It was right before Christmas. And I said, no, I'm not gonna go in before Christmas. I'm gonna spend Christmas with my kids. I'll go in after Christmas. And I remember on that phone call, my dad said, you know what, I don't think you're gonna go in. I think you're gonna go through Christmas and you're just not gonna go. And you know, one of my defects saved my life because I said, I'll show you, I will go, and I'll go in today. And I went in today. My clean date's 12/15/15. Happy birthday. So I went into rehab, and it was a 30-day inpatient program, and while I was in there, I learned how to love myself. I learned that I was an addict, right? Because when they said, you need to go to rehab, I said, no, rehab is for addicts, and they were like, yeah. But I wasn't what I thought an addict looked like, you know? I didn't think that I looked like an addict in what I had in my mind. It took me about a week and a half for me to realize that I was in fact an addict and that I had a problem. But they taught me how to deal with my anxiety and my depression without medication. They taught me how to deal with my chronic pain without medication. And one of the most important things they taught me there was self-love. I learned that nobody has the right to abuse you nonstop whenever they want to just because you hurt them. They have the right to leave. I even think they probably have the right to tell you off when they first find out, but they don't have the right to abuse you nonstop. And that was a really important lesson for me. Because when I got out of rehab, I was home for, I think it was my first or second night home, I was asleep. And my husband woke me up in the middle of the night, shook me awake so he could tell me what a piece of shit I was. And I got up out of bed and I said, no, we're not gonna do that anymore. You need to apologize. So his response was to call the police to try to get me arrested. See, I had a traffic violation, and he thought, I'll show her, I'm gonna send her to jail for telling her not to tell, you know, that I'm not allowed to tell her she's a piece of shit. Turns out, police do not care about traffic violations when they're called on domestic issues, just so you'll know. thank God. But he wouldn't leave that night, and because he hadn't hit me, the police wouldn't make him leave. So I called my mom. We weren't on speaking terms at that point, but I called her. I said, Mom, I need your help. He called the police. He's trying to get me arrested. I can't do this anymore. And she had seen how crazy he was when I was in rehab, because since he couldn't call me and abuse me every night, see, the nurses put a stop to that. He would call her. He would go to her house, and he would act crazy over there. And thank God he did. Because when I left that night, he said, nobody will ever love you the way that I love you. And I said, that's the point. Nobody will ever love me in that way again. But I left that night with a suitcase, both of my babies, and that's when I started getting the messages, you know, and I was clean, right? And I knew I had to stay clean to win the custody battles that were coming. And he said, if you don't do what I tell you to do, I will make sure that you lose both of your kids. And he tried everything in his power to do that, because he contacted my first husband, and they both sued me for custody. So my first year clean, I was going through a divorce and two custody battles. And I knew that I had to stay clean. And I had to practice a lot of courage and self-love, because I kept getting told by these guys, no judge will ever give you kids. You're an addict. It was really difficult to read all of the nasty things that were said about me in the court filings. Some of them were true. A lot of them were. And I had to read nasty messages from both of my exes, and you know, part of that spiritual growth journey for me, you know, so far was self-love, learning how to stand up for myself, forgiving myself for the mistakes I made, because I'm not my worst mistakes. And I had to surrender, because I couldn't control the situation. All I could do was the next right thing and keep doing what I was supposed to do and just trust the process, trust in my higher power, And that's what I kept doing. I'm real thankful that I had my mom, because she didn't save my life. And she was so pissed off that my crazy ex kept contacting her. She said, that asshole, I'm gonna hire the nastiest, bitchiest lawyer I can find. And so she ended up hiring the lawyer that represented my dad in their divorce. And she was the nastiest, bitchiest lawyer that she ever found. And she fucking stood by my side, and she also saved my life.
Okay.
Technical difficulties?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So at the end of that, I remember being in court, you know, and I remember the amicus attorney, the attorney who was representing our daughter during the custody battle. She had asked him, you know, and this is a man who, you know, would always just tell me the worst things about myself, and gaslit me for a year. And he would say, I was so supportive. And the lawyer asked him, were you supportive of her recovery? Oh yes, I was the most supportive person in her life for her recovery. Nobody was more supportive than me. She said, okay, so I see some text messages here where you said, if you don't leave rehab right now, if you don't leave this sober home right now, I'm gonna make sure that you lose your kids. You better get your ass home now. Was that supportive? And he was a little bit stuck. And that was a time that I really felt seen. That somebody who wasn't paid to take my side saw what was going on. So when the judge granted me custody, I was floored, and I was so happy, and I cried. He also cried for different reasons. He didn't want to pay child support or give me the car. But it was wonderful, and the reason that I won that case, I won both of the custody battles, was because I stayed clean. It was because I was consistent in my recovery. My lawyer told me, you know, I drank the Kool-Aid, the NA Kool-Aid. And I surrendered to this disease because I knew that I couldn't control it. And I, you know, there was a lot of acceptance there and a lot of courage to read everything, to not respond, to just let it go. And all of this really kind of prepared me for what would come next in my life, something that I never imagined would ever happen to my family. My youngest daughter came home one night and her legs stopped working. She couldn't stand up anymore, and so I took her to urgent care, and they said, no, she has a virus, she's fine. It's like, that doesn't sound right, you know, because she shouldn't have a fever. And they said, no, it's a virus, go home. Okay, so I went home, and I had to go to work the next day, and I'd only been at this job for 5 or 6 months. And I was talking to a coworker about what was going on because I was worried, and my boss overheard me, the owner of my company. And he said, that's not normal, Victoria. Go take her to the doctor. I said, we don't have insurance. Because you see, her dad was supposed to get her insurance, but he never did. And I couldn't afford it. So he said, that's fine. You go to my pediatrician, have them send me the bill, I'll pay for it. So I left, I picked her up. We went to the pediatrician, and he said, yeah, this isn't normal, but you don't have insurance, so I don't want to send you to the hospital right away. Well, 2 days later, it was still bad. It wasn't getting better, it was getting worse. And she was crying a lot, and I didn't know what to do. And I called him, and he said, okay, I'm gonna call Texas Children's, I'm gonna get you in there right now. When we got in there, they thought it was something called Guillain-Barré, which I'd never heard of before, and apparently what that does is it's a virus that causes you to go numb from your toes and your fingers inwards, and if it reaches your heart, it'll kill you. So that was really scary, but at least we were getting help. So I said, we're gonna do a spinal tap to confirm it. They couldn't get her spinal fluid, and they said, that's really strange. We're gonna do an MRI, do the spinal tap under the MRI so we can see what we're doing. I said, okay. So they put her to sleep, they did the MRI, they call me back there when she wakes up, and they said, you know, we still couldn't get the spinal fluid. And the tech pulled up the MRI images, and he saw something in there that made him run out of the room. I didn't really know what I was looking at, so I'm not trained to look at MRIs. And he came back in with a doctor, and they said, We know what's wrong. She has a tumor that grew into her spine. They immediately took her into surgery, and they told me, we're going to get the tumor out of her spine first. She has cancer. We don't know what kind it is yet. But we got to get the tumor out of her spine because it's causing damage to her nerves. And that's what had happened. It was slow growing. It grew into her spine so slowly that we had no idea what was going on, and eventually just compressed the nerves to the point that she couldn't move her legs anymore. So what should have been a 6-hour surgery ended up being a 3-hour surgery. They said it just jumped right out. And we spent the next 10 days in the hospital. And we would actually spend the next 3 months or so in and out of the hospital, in and out of doctor's offices. She had another surgery because they had to remove the rest of the tumor from her abdomen. They had a surgery to put in the port for her chemotherapy. And more MRIs every couple of months just to make sure and check on it. And that was one of the scariest moments in my life because I couldn't do anything about it. And part of me wanted to blame myself, right? Because I used when I was pregnant. But I told myself, I'm not the only person with a kid who has neuroblastoma, and I'm sure all of them didn't use drugs. So I was able to kind of talk myself down from that. And I had to trust in my higher power, which was, for me, it was God, the doctors, and the people in Narcotics Anonymous, these rooms, because I had to come somewhere to talk about what was going on so that I didn't go back out and use, because there were times during that process that I really, really wanted to. But more than that, I wanted to be there for my kids and I wanted to stay clean. And I was able to do that. I was able to stay clean and be present and be there for my kid. And the really amazing thing is that during that process, I was able to offer forgiveness to my first husband. He actually came in and brought my other daughter, and he said, you know what? I'll never forget that conversation. He said, your other daughter, that's my daughter's sister. That makes, you guys are still family. She's family, we're gonna be here for you guys. And it was so scary because I had to trust him to take care of our other daughter that he just bought me custody for, not 6 months before that. And I was so scared that he was gonna try to do that again and file something saying, well, she can't do it. She's got to take care of this other kid. And part of me thought, maybe I can't. Maybe I can't do this anymore. But I really reached down deep inside and got a lot of courage together to get through it. And I was able to forgive my ex, and he was able to forgive me. And today we have a great relationship. I talk to his wife all the time, which I never thought that would happen. And not 2 weeks after we finished all of her procedures and she was in the clear, I mean, we were still getting MRIs every couple months just to check in on it, but we were done with chemo, we were done with the surgeries, and wouldn't you know it, Harvey flooded all of Houston. And I was really thankful in that moment that we were already done, because I couldn't have imagined what we would have done if the city was flooded, but she also needed chemo. I'm really grateful for all of that because it helped put things in perspective for me, and it helped me grow spiritually during my recovery, because I didn't have a choice. You know, to get through this stuff, I really had to grow, and my willingness to grow spiritually saved my life. I would not have been able to handle these situations when I was using. I couldn't have imagined myself handling a situation like my kid getting cancer with any amount of grace. And I could see the difference, right, between the way that I was handling it one day at a time and the normies, or even the people who should have been in, you know, should be in the rooms but aren't, in my family, were having a much harder time with it. So I'm really, really grateful that I had a place to go and tools that I could lean on and these spiritual principles that I could work on. Today I like to practice a lot of gratitude to get through those uncomfortable feelings. And all of that, you know, also helped me deal with the pandemic, which we've all been dealing with. And God, like, how freaking stressful has this been, especially people with kids and homeschooling? What a joke. Have you ever tried to homeschool a kindergartner? Anyway, but I was able to get through it. I was able to get through it because I had connections with people in these rooms. We had our little quarantine pot, so I could get together with people in person and give them a hug. And I was so grateful when they finally opened up the rooms again and I could hug everybody. So I want to finish up by talking a little bit about the fact that I spent the first 3 years of my recovery single. I didn't even date at all for the first 2 years because I really needed to get to know myself again. I've been in relationships most of my life. And I'm really grateful that I did, because when I finally did get into a relationship, it ended up being one of the healthiest relationships, the healthiest relationship of my life, which has a pretty low bar because I've never had one before. And it's really uncomfortable at times because we talk about our feelings instead of fighting. And sometimes that just makes me want to pick a fight, but I don't because of spirituality. Because I'm real spiritual today. No, and it's hard. And you know, it allows me to practice unconditional love. And I've also received that unconditional love because I'm not always, you know, at my best. And it's allowed me to practice a lot of understanding and intimacy, you know, like non-sexual intimacy, like getting to know somebody and letting them get to know me on an intimate level and being vulnerable, which is hard. It is so hard to be vulnerable, and it's, you know, like I'm up here being vulnerable, like that's just hard. And letting somebody in and getting to know those really mushy, raw parts of us. So, you know, when I was finally able to do that, like, that was one of the most beautiful things of my life. I've also been able to, again, develop those connections. I have some of the best friends of my entire life. Some of y'all are sitting in this room. And I met them in these rooms. I'm really, really grateful for the program of Narcotics Anonymous. This program saved my life. Y'all showing me how to love myself, to practice acceptance, surrender, be consistent, be courageous, be understanding, be vulnerable. That shit saved my life. And I want to thank you guys so much. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you.
All right, we got one more speaker, Lance T, and then after Lance, we will clean up and go home. Come up here, Lance.
My name is Lance.
Lance!
I'm grateful to be clean today. I'm grateful to be at a meeting today. I don't know about y'all, but the background noise is driving me crazy. You know, but I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful that I was asked to speak. And thank you to the Hackney Convention Committee for asking me to do this. I would be lying if I said I wasn't nervous. I wasn't nervous until I heard the clapping, and then I knew it was my turn. That's okay.
Just look at me.
So the topic, the willingness to grow spiritually keeps us buoyant. So when I was asked to share, I had to look that word up. Not because I didn't know what the word meant, but I wanted to look it up anyway so I could figure out what it meant to me in regards to this topic, right? And there was a couple different definitions, and the one I liked the best was joyful and optimistic, right? You know, I could also relate to the floating part too, you know? Keeps us afloat, right? So, my recovery started. My clean date is 1/24/13, which to me is amazing every time I see it. I used for over 35 years, and I thought that, you know, my life was okay. And so when I got into recovery and I started to realize that my perception was off, the way I handled things was not the best. The choices I made were, at that time, based on me being high all the time, because I was high all the time. And as I started to take this program serious, get a sponsor and all of the suggestions that were given when we get here, things started to change, you know. And you know, my first sponsor, I'm grateful for him, because he was real serious about the steps. So when I asked him to be my sponsor, he said, "This is what you have to do if you want me to sponsor you." You know, and I started doing that. Afterwards, he turned out to be a real asshole and I couldn't deal with it no more. You know, but I am still grateful for him because, you know, there's some things that he made us do, like get together on the weekends, you know, and read out of all of these meditation books and then share about it, right? With just a couple of months clean, you know what I mean? I'm grateful for that because it taught me how to read something, figure out how it related to me, and then talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like what I'm doing now. And then time went on, you know, and I accumulated a little bit of clean time, and then life started to happen, you know. I got laid off, and I wanted to use, but I called my sponsor, that same dude I just talked about, and I didn't use. I don't remember what he said, but I didn't use that day. And, you know, I've been clean ever since. So recently, this topic actually means a lot to me because my growth spiritually has shown itself, you know, in a couple different ways. And I want to share one way that happened. I'm going to share two ways, probably three ways. Maybe six ways, I don't know. But so this first one is something that happened to me a while back, maybe a couple years ago, and it happened at work. You know, because my growth comes from work and it comes from home and my relationship. That's where I get the most growth, mostly at home in my relationship. But this one happened at work, and I got into it with this dude, and I really showed my ass. That's what my sponsor now said to me then, before he was my sponsor. and it was true. You know, I showed my ass, I threatened to kick his ass. You know, I hadn't been that mad in a long time. I'm really grateful I didn't hit the guy. But the next day, and this is where the recovery part comes in, I called my sponsor at the time, and you know, I went to work the next day and I apologized to that fella. And I apologized to everybody that heard me show my ass. And it was a very humbling thing for me to do, you know, but I was grateful that I was able to do it. And at that time, I was like, wow, that was pretty grown up of me, you know, even though I showed my ass. And another time, this just happened, what's the day, Saturday? This just happened Thursday.
Come on.
So I'm at work, and actually, there's a new guy there, and he's in sales. Parts. I work for a forklift company, and he's in parts, and he's a real, you know, real chipper and happy-go-lucky dude, and he reminds me of you, Sam. He does. You know, and this guy is one of them type of guys that's really friendly, says hello to everybody, and, you know, he seems like a really cool dude. He's 35 years old, he just graduated from A&M College, and he's got a fiance, and he's about to put babies in her. You know, he shared all this with me, right? So, and I was like, oh, that's cool, man, that's cool. So we're on our way to the parts department, and he says, "What's up, boy?" That's what he said to me. And he didn't say it like right next to me where I could have maybe overlooked it. He yelled it from like, from where I am now all the way to where Eric is over there, right? "What's up, boy?" And it rubbed me the wrong way. It did. So when we got into the parts room, which is a confined area, I told him, I said, damn, now I can't remember his name. I want to call him Sam. Oh. And maybe because that is his name. His name is Sam.
Wow.
So I said, Sam? And I had a serious look on my face because it was serious, right? Recovery has taught me to, you know, set some boundaries and try and keep them up and don't sacrifice them for nobody, right? So I looked at him and I said, Sam, I'm probably almost twice your age. So the appropriate way to address me is Sir or Lance. And he looked at me and he didn't say anything, right? But there were some people in there that heard that. So at lunchtime, we're in the break room, and he came in there and he said, Lance, I said, I apologize. He said, I'm sorry. I thought you were going to kick my ass. I said, well, no, I wouldn't do that. I just wanted you to know that, you know, it was inappropriate for you to address me that way. And he apologized again, and then the next time I seen him, he was like, hey, sir, how you doing? So, I mean, I was proud of myself for handling that way. You know, I didn't say it mean. I didn't say it in a way where I wanted him to think I was gonna kick his ass. I just wanted him to know that, hey, man, you just can't, you don't do that. You know? Did I mention he was a white dude? Not that matters, but I mean, you know, it kind of does. It kind of does, right?
Yeah.
And so now, you know, every time he sees me, he comes up and he talks to me. So everybody in the shop is like teasing me, like, oh, y'all best of friends now, you know, because those people that were in the parts department that heard that spread some, you know, people talk. You know, I'm a mechanic, and you know, mechanics, we shoot the shit and we crack jokes, and so now everybody's thinking that Lance was about to kick somebody's ass in the parts room. So I hope he doesn't get in trouble over that. You know, it's not a big deal, and I'm just grateful that I was able to way that you know, just handle it in a loving, kind way. You know what I mean? And I learned that in here. You know what I mean? Some things are very uncomfortable for me. I was sharing with my sponsor that because he always talks about a greater awareness of self, right? And this is the way I've learned in my recovery thus far. I come to meetings, you know, I listen to people share. I listen to people who have went through things, and I might have to hear something 100 times. And that 101st time, I might say, oh, I get it. I understand that now. You know, and then I can relate to it. Or even if I can't relate to it, I can understand it. And then there might come a time or situation in my life where I'll remember and I'll try to apply that, you know. My last sponsor used to always tell me to be the bigger man, you know, and I live by that today. I live by that today in my relationship. I live by that today in my work, you know, and I try to apply that in my service. When I first, my home group is Show Up to Grow Up, by the way. We meet on Wednesday nights at 2403 Rayford Road in Spring, Texas.
I know.
Yeah, every Wednesday, we there, I'm there. And shout out. But, so, and you know, I didn't realize I had so many incidents until I came up here and started sharing. But when I first joined that home group, there was a fella there that was handling things differently than I was used to it being handled, you know? And I kind of, you know, kind of went up against him, and we kind of got into a little bit of an argument, you know? Because I still think that I be knowing some stuff, and you know, I still got, you know, that pride and that ego that gets in the way of my spiritual fitness from time to time, and sometimes it's very, very, very uncomfortable. So when this dude said what he said, and I said what I said, and then you know how you get to, and then you start talking over one another, and I was a little heated. I would say that I wasn't, but really I was, you know? And I have to be honest, I have to be aware, right, of my behavior. And, but today, I'm grateful for that dude. I'm grateful for, you know, all of the work that he does in my homeroom, you know? Another situation that happened to me at work was that I realized that my behavior is still the same as it was when I was using in a lot of ways. One of those ways is that I always think that nothing's gonna happen, right? Even though I know that if I let them forks down, right, and I know that the hose is under there, that it might get stuck. And even before I let the forks down, I thought that, but I didn't go and check because I thought it won't happen. Just like all the times when I was going to, you know, get some dope and I was like, I won't get caught or I won't get stopped, you know? Or all the times that I, you know, was doing something that I knew I shouldn't be doing and I thought, it'll be okay, I won't get stopped or I won't get caught. So that's one of the behaviors that I have to be aware of, you know? And you know, growing spiritually means that I have to evaluate that and I have to, stop being lazy, because a lot of times that's what it is. I'm just lazy, you know? I don't want to do it. I don't want to get off the forklift because I'm tired, my knee hurt, and see if the doggone cord is under there. Or I don't want to grab the bolt with the screwdriver, with the magnet that I got right in my shirt pocket. I want to, you know, just try and hold it with two fingers and knowing if I drop it, it's going to fall in the crate and it's going to be gone. And what happened? I dropped it. You know, and it's simple things like that I'm talking about, but, you know, it's something that I have to be aware of. You know, and recovery has taught me that I have to be aware of the things that I'm doing. That I have to be aware of how I'm feeling. And feelings are very, very difficult for me. They're difficult for me to express. In most cases, they're difficult for me to explain. And I've gotten really good at the first step, like surrender. You know, I've gotten pretty doggone good at that. Most of the time, I can just, you know, surrender it. I can hold my tongue. I can tell myself, I can talk myself down is what I call it. Most of the time, I'm getting pretty good at that, you know. Somebody else might not think so, but I'm telling y'all right now, y'all gotta listen to me. I'm getting pretty good at it, right? But, you know, the thing that helps me the most is having someone that I can call and talk to, right, when I'm going through something. You know, that's what helps me the most, and I've had that ever since I've been in recovery. You know, and I remember an addict told me, because, you know, I didn't get here until I was 47 years old, you know, and I had accomplished a couple of things, you know, so I thought I knew a little bit about life, and this guy in the rooms told me, you might know something about life, but you don't know nothing about living life without the use of drugs, right? And that hit me. That was one of them moments when I was like, wow, you're right, I don't. Because everything that happened in my life, I used over it. Good, bad, indifferent, it didn't matter, every single day. But to deal with life on life's terms without the use of drugs is something that I needed help with and still need help with to this day. You know, because there's situations out there where I get uncomfortable. I want to run. I want to get mean. I want to go back to my old way of handling things. you know? And I ain't never been no gangster type dude. I don't like to fight or nothing like that, but I could be surgical with my words and you know, hurt feelings and say things that don't need to be said, you know? So I try to ask myself, if I'm looking at someone and I'm thinking that the way they would handle something is different than the way I would handle something, I have to ask myself, does that make it right? I mean, does that make it wrong? And it doesn't. You know, everybody is not going to handle things the way I handle things, you know? And that causes me a lot of uncomfortable moments. So I have to talk myself down, so to speak. And if I can't talk myself down, then I don't say nothing at all. Not until I can process what's going on in my brain. Not until I can talk to my sponsor and find out if what I'm thinking is right or wrong, or if it makes any sense at all, you know? Not until I can come to a meeting and talk to some other recovering addicts that might have went through what I'm going through or felt what I felt. One of the best things that happened to me when I got into recovery is realizing that I'm not the only one that think the way I do or have done the things that I've done. You know, I thought as a man, some of the stuff I was doing was something that it only happened to me or I only felt. You know, I got a whole lot of doggone relief and hope when I realized that I'm not unique, you know? So when I can come in the rooms and I can get a recovering addict to talk about the things that they're going through or relate to the things that I'm going through, that gives me a whole lot of hope, man, and it fills my spirit. Today I know how to love. I know how to love. I heard the speaker say, I have a God-shaped hole in my spirit, right? And I need to fill it with God-shaped things, right? And you know, for me, my higher power is a loving, caring, kind, higher power, right? So if I can help someone, that fills my spirit, right? If I go to a meeting and I can share somebody, you know, it doesn't even matter if anybody gets anything out of it or not, because most of the time I don't even know what the hell I'm talking about if I'm sharing up here, right? But the one thing that, the two things that I know a little bit about is myself and recovery, you know? So I can talk about that. You know, when I get real serious about how this program has affected me and what it's done for me in my life. So the fact that I can experience love today. I got a grandkid on the way, y'all. I got a granddaughter that's going to be due, that's going to be coming into this world in December. And I can't even explain the love that I feel for this child that ain't even here yet. You know? It's a whole other different type of love that's going on in my heart. You know? And I'm grateful for that. You know, I talked about those feelings that are uncomfortable, but I'm grateful that I can feel today. You know, and most of the time when I'm going through some uncomfortable feelings is when I get my most significant growth. You know, when life is going good, you know, I'm not worried about anything. I'm just floating. I'm just buoyant, right? But when I start to sink, that's when it's time for me to start doing some doggone soul searching, start calling my sponsor, you know, and start talking about what's really going on in my life and how I truly feel. You know, and a lot of times that takes work. And I mentioned earlier that I'm lazy, you know, but when that pain gets strong enough, then I start to put in the work, you know. And I'm grateful that recovery has taught me how to do that. You know, and I haven't found it necessary to use drugs in almost 8 years, you know? And that's a miracle for me. I started using it at 14 and didn't stop till I was 47. So I'm grateful for that, you know? I'm grateful for this program. I'm grateful for you guys. And I'm grateful that I had an opportunity to share. You
So thank you guys very much. All right.
All right. We're going to close this meeting with the third step prayer.
Okay.
Let's have a moment of silence. Maniacs have said,
take my will of my life. Guide me in my recovery and show me how to live.
Keep coming back.
Works if you work.
Work it because you work.